live from Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show, presented by Scott K. Nichols and State Farm Insurance. And now, here's your hosts, Brandon Reif and Jonathan Birdsong.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Crossroads Sports Radio, episode number 168. I'm your host, Brandon Reif, and as always, with my main man, Jonathan Birdsong. JB, how are you, my guy?
Man, I'm doing a whole lot better than Nate Bjornstrand.
Yeah.
Man, this one you thought it was just going to be a fair day in sports talk radio. Dude, the Pacers just showed up and put a, you know, saying cherry on top, now didn't they? So
yeah.
I know we're getting to that a little deeper, man. But like, I'm having a pretty good day, man, here in Circle City, man. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very tropical weather here in Indianapolis. Other than that, it's been good. It's been a busy day, a busy world in sports right now. Kind of go with everything going on. Pacers fans, we've went through two head coaches named Nate in the last 10 months. So, but yeah, we'll be talking all that tonight. We've got the Indiana Pacers talk, obviously, today. Pacers fired Nate Bjorkman. We don't have to say that name anymore, as much as Jonathan was struggling with it, as everybody was. After one season, we've got the NBA playoffs talk tonight. Hawks 76ers. Bucks and Nets, Jazz, Clips, and then the other one, Phoenix Suns up against the my Denver Nuggets right now. So we've got that talk. We've got a little NFL talk. We've got news and notes from the NBA as well, and then some NFL, and then we got some WWE, the Bret Hart documentary that just was out on A&E. We'll hit a little bit on that this evening. But this is going to be a very basketball heavy episode, as we should right now. That's what's going on. That's what's taking our time. But also, the NHL playoffs are going on as well. So it's not just there, but you know, we're looking at everything going NHL, MLB. Jason DeGrom, by the way, MLB talk. Here's your MLB talk. Put it on the list if you got it this early in the show. DeGrom is going to be he is phenomenal. Right now, he is probably pitching one of the best jobs a major league pitcher will ever do in the history of Major League Baseball for the Mets. I was looking up DeGrom's statistics, and give me a second as I finish bringing it back up. He's already wrapped up the Cy Young Award. It's already wrapped up. Why the hell is it not coming up? Give me one second here.
Brandon, I'll chime in. Some people would say he's already got the MVP kind of wrapped up as well, considering where pitching is, and I know we can talk about that as well, where pitching is considered here in this season. I hope he doesn't have any stigma that's kind of going on with Major League Baseball.
Garrett Cole, exactly. Garrett Cole looked like a tear in the headlights when he got asked that question. I don't know how to answer that. That means you're guilty. Yes.
Right.
Jacob DeGrom, I don't know why he adjusted DeGrom, 5-2 this year. He's got a .062 ERA, 9 games, 58 innings, 93 strikeouts. So – and he's only given up not very many hits, if I remember right. Yeah, 25 hits. 25 hits over 58 innings. So the man is a pitching machine. The fact that he's not undefeated just shows how bad right now that Mets offense is. They're not giving him any support.
right.
John, there is a problem with Major League Baseball, and we don't have to do it on this show since this is a basketball-heavy show tonight. There is a problem, though, with Major League pitching, and I just read an article in Sports Illustrated about it. We had the steroid issue with batters back in the 90s. Now it's the grip and the spin rate of these baseballs coming from the pitchers that they're getting a little extra in those pitches, and now it's starting to become a big issue. I've seen several cases of it this year where it's like, dude, that guy's definitely got something on his glove. It's, this guy can't throw pitches like this. To where now you got, like you said, Garrett Cole's like, I don't know how to answer that question. Well, duh, that means you're obviously doing it. But there's a silver lining I read that says baseball's got a problem, and it's a big problem, and it has to do with pitchers getting their pitches tipped with extra spin based on pine tar and different illegal substances.
Brandon, I know you love your new job that you got. I know you bought a new car and all that. I'm not trying to tell everybody your business. And I know you love what you do here at Crossroads Sports. But, like, dude, baseball needs a new commissioner. And I was going to tweet it out earlier that, you know what I'm saying, they need to think about it. You need to get your resume together and put that out there. Dude, because I think it's one thing, if everybody remembers, man, I know we got to talk about basketball, and we'll get to that, but this is the hot topic right now. Controversy creates cash, right? Eric Bischoff said that many, many years ago when he was running WCW, whatever. But, like, listen, man, baseball doesn't know how to properly manage their controversy. They don't. You can kind of like controversy because it gets the eyes and ears and attention on you. But, like, this makes the total sport look bad. You know what I mean? Does it not? So, and they're kind of waffling. You know what I'm saying? You're talking to somebody, you know what I'm saying, what I know about baseball could probably fill up a thimble. That's just being modest. But, you know what I'm saying, what I know about baseball, they need to do something about it because hitting's down and viewership is in certain markets with certain, you know what I'm saying, as we know, between the 25 and 30-year-olds, the viewership is not there. You know what I'm saying? Not till we get to the playoffs into the World Series. That's when everything kind of peaks back up, and then people get sports betting and all that, kind of getting eyes and ears on. But, like, this right here, this gets eyes and ears on them, this issue with pitchers, you know what I'm saying, with them having a level of cheating that favors them. But it's not what you want. That's kind of how I see it. It's not the kind of controversy that you want.
Right.
But they haven't come out in a statement saying they're you know what I'm saying, to say, hey, tell the pitchers to stop using this at all.
Right.
Which
right.
I kind of find interesting, you know what I'm saying, mind-boggling interesting.
Okay. It's just something that I saw and I read, and it started to become a greater issue. But, yeah, absolutely 100%, you're right, but they need to figure that out on that aspect. That and a list about 10 other things they need to figure out with Major League Baseball. All right, John, let's dive right in. Indiana Pacers. Kevin Pritchard 2 weeks ago had his little press conference. He decided to say, you know what, Nate Bjorkgren is our coach for now. Anytime a coach or a GM would say that for now and not giving his stamp of approval pretty much means you're out. I said he was out. There's no way you can move on. You said he should be out, and then you said, I don't think the Pacers are going to make a move, I think, is what you said, because how silent they were for so long.
I just said that. I just said that. I tweeted that out 2 days ago, man, just because it being the middle part of the summer, hell, the draft is in 1 month's time. I know the draft is pretty much the general manager and front office type of thing, but you kind of got to be, you know what I'm saying, tied together with your coaching staff on, like, who you want to bring in as far as, like, players and player development, right? I don't know, Brandon. I was kind of shocked, just like everybody else. You know what I'm saying? There was probably other candidates that I know people are kind of throwing out there as far as, like, prior to and even after about Nate Bjorkgren replacing the Pacers coach. Again, Brandon, I was shocked. Not falling on the floor shocked, but I was shocked that they kind of made this move. Like I said, the middle part of the summer. The season doesn't start till, you know what I'm saying, October or whatever, but still, you know what I'm saying, to kind of fall flat as they did this year, again, you know what I'm saying, you're going to be paying two coaches named Nate over the next couple seasons. I don't know, man. Whoever Pritchard brings in, it better be a slam dunk.
Yeah, so the news broke out this morning, probably around 11 something, I think it was, when I sent you the text, because I had my Woj tweets, my Woj alerts on, and as soon as I got the thing, I immediately sent it to you. It was weird. I was looking at my phone when it happened. I had to take a double take that they parted ways with him. Yeah, I think it was much needed. I also think John part of that waiting game for them to do it was the fact that they probably wanted to see who was going to get let go and who was going to be possibly available to be kind of their possible next head coach. And I think Pritchard had an idea where he wants to go. He kind of hinted at it today during his press conference that he kind of knows who he wants to talk to. Obviously, you know, as Scott Agnes and Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted out today, Pacers are looking at somebody with a little more head coaching experience, somebody that come in there can take the locker room. So, I think there was a wait and see because they wanted to wait and see who else was getting out. Obviously, right. Terry Stotts was let go in Portland, and I've been beating on this Terry Stotts drum for the last 3 weeks now that the Indiana Pacers needed to go out and get him if he became available.
Right.
Stotts, obviously, with the Portland ties, he is originally from Indiana as well. He's a player's coach. He can take the respect in the locker room. He's been with Portland for 9 years, led him to the playoffs every single season. That's the kind of winning that the Indiana Pacers are looking for to continue to lead. That guy has the most experience if they're looking for somebody. I've been beating the Terry Stotts drum. I'll continue to beat it every single day. I think he's great. I also think he may be number two on the Pacers list, though. As much as I think I want Kevin Pritchard to go after him, he may be the number two because I think – Let me preface it this. I think the Pacers get Terry Stotts. I think he's going to be their coach. I will get ready. Bet the house. I will bet the house Terry Stotts will be the head coach of Indiana Pacers. But I don't think it's Kevin Pritchard's number one choice because I think, and give it a couple more days the way this is looking, but if the Milwaukee Bucks get swept or they lose in five games, it's already been said that that our boy Budenholzer was already going to be most likely let go if they didn't make it to the NBA Finals. So you got to think Mike Budenholzer probably moves to the top of the Pacers' wish list of a guy that they want to go out and get as head coach. Now, the question is, would Mike want the position? He may. I think it'd be a great thing. But there's another thing. But the money, what would the Pacers be willing to offer? The fact that you said they're already paying another coach. But I also think maybe the Boston Celtics come after Mike Budenholzer to bring him in there as their head coach. And to be honest, John, it's a little more attractive to go to Boston than it is Indiana, especially with the number of pieces and talent you have. The problem on the flip side, and I'll be devil's advocate because that's what I do on this show, does Budenholzer really want to go in there and maybe manage franchise players, manage attitudes and stuff like that in Boston where – obviously, in Milwaukee, he kind of handled it, I guess, okay. I mean, obviously, he's going to be thinking fire most likely. Handled it okay. Or does he want to go to Indiana where he doesn't have to manage and worry about a star player where he can go in there like he did the Atlanta team that had, what, five All-Stars that one season where everybody kind of did their part? If you want to come to Indiana, kind of do that with the talent that you have. I think Kevin Pritchard's number one target is Mike Budenholzer. I just don't think Mike Budenholzer is number one is what Indiana is what he's wanting. I think it's probably Boston or possibly one of these other positions. I don't think Orlando, but I think Boston is going to end up taking him away for a little bit more money. And then I think we still settle for Terry Stotts, who's not a bad pick overall.
Either one of those guys is not a bad pick. Either one of those guys, if you remember even the year removed when ownership was kind of on Terry Stotts' head, let's say that. Dame Lillard came out and advocated for him to be around. So it's not that he doesn't have a respect of star player. You know what I'm saying? It's just that the ownership group thought that they should win more. They should advance more in the playoffs. You can't knock that. Same thing you can say about Budenholzer. You got players, you know what I'm saying, and I know we'll talk about the Milwaukee Bucks here in the next segment or so, but again, you got to motivate your team. You got to put them in the right position, you know what I'm saying, so that they can win. And sometimes you don't necessarily see that. A coach can only do so much. The players got to do what they want to do. So I say all to say this, but they still have winning records. They still know how to run great programs. They still know how to run and how to, you know what I'm saying, and to get to the playoffs, where that's kind of what the Pacers have kind of lacked. You know what I'm saying? Even with Nate McMillan here, you know what I'm saying? We would get to the playoffs and then have that, you know what I'm saying, that first round disappoint. So if either one of those candidates, whether it be Terry Stotts or Budenholz, would fit for what the Pacers are kind of looking for, especially when you talk about veteran present coach that knows how to run a locker room, that doesn't alienate, knows how to, you know what I'm saying, get the team pulled together. But the product on the floor still is what is still one going to determine wins and losses for whoever, whether the Pacers, Portland Trailblazers, you know. And I know we're talking about the Pacers in this regard. That's the product on the floor and how guys, what position you put them in to win, is going to be tantamount to the Pacers winning. They need, and obviously Nate Bjorken wasn't that there wasn't that bill of goods that we kind of got sold on. What he sold on the Pacers. You have to be aware, just because you're assistant on a championship level team doesn't necessarily mean, you know what I'm saying, unless you're bringing, you know what I'm saying, Kyle Lowry or Kawhi Leonard as he had as an assistant with the Toronto Raptors, unless you bring those guys with you, you know what I'm saying, you better become better than just with your iPad. And I think that's kind of what we cover here on the show. There was a whole lot of, you know what I'm saying, what we kind of saw in the press conference and then what people said behind Nate Bjorken said that wasn't what he represented himself as being. They said he was more of a jackass to be. It's not my quote. I'm just using what the guy kind of said. He was a jerk. He was a jackass. He was a jerk behind the scenes. And I'm not saying, again, you know what I'm saying, we know athletes, whether they be in the NFL, NHL, or NFL, or whatever, NBA in this regard, we know they need to be coddled. They need to be told that they are good. But if you don't put out a good program for them to be successful on both sides of the court, you know what I'm saying, this is what you're going to get: locker room turnaround. Revolt, rather. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of what happened with the Nate Bjorken era. I know you threw out your candidates. I'm going to throw out my wish list, and that's definitely what it is. Frank Vogel,
yeah.
You know, and I always going to beat that drum. Frank Vogel. But again, that's just a wish of mine. If Frank Vogel was ever to come back to coach in Indiana, he'd have more power than the general manager. Now, wouldn't he? He just would. He's actually a guy that should have never left. The ego of Larry Bird and what Frank Vogel did that particular season. That rubbed him right out of the Pacers organization. Frank Vogel is a free agent. Nobody's gonna say, other than myself, nobody, maybe a couple others, they're gonna be saying bring back Frank, but he's not coming. He's in La La Land for another run. The other names, if I'm realistically thinking about bringing, you know what I'm saying, somebody that can bring another championship winning attitude, there's no way I wouldn't call Juwan Howard, to be honest with you. But him leaving Michigan, excuse me, hold on, Brent, I got sneezed. Sorry. Oh, I got it.
Okay.
Sorry. Way to go for radio. I'm trying to be professional, but, like, man, I had to sneeze. But anyway, there's no way I wouldn't call Juwan Howard. From what I gather, Brandon, he would even listen to – I'm not saying he would leave Michigan. He would even listen to Orlando if they called him. Spends a lot of time down in the Florida market, obviously.
He's
been assistant for the Miami Heat for 6 years. I don't think
– What do you give the Pacers? I give them 20% – I give them 10% on going after Juwan, because Pritchard said they want somebody with head coaching experience already.
Yeah.
In
I get what you're
saying. That's why I kind of take Juwan out of it.
Right. I'm saying they should do themselves a favor and see where his head's at. Because, again – the same respect you get when he's recruiting the kid, right? In this day and age, he would get the same respect. He played. He almost as played as much as our guy who just retired from Miami. He almost played that long for the NBA. I can't think of his name right now, but you know what I'm talking about. He just retired for the Miami Heat. But, like, no, man, they would do themselves a favor by at least contacting Juwan. Some crazy people. Brandon, I listen to the same radio shows you listen to. I kind of watch my news feed. People think about Brad Stevenson. Once Brad Stevenson got moved up to vice president of operations, the Boston says you can take his name out of Pacer coaching and IU coaching. You can take those off. You know what I'm saying? The only time he'll come back from Indiana is if Butler wants to honor that Final Four team with Gordon Hayward and Ronald Norad, if they wanted them, Butler comes back. The only time you'll see him come back to Indiana, he's Boston Celtics. He said it. He said it. You said it. You played the sound bite. He roots for the Patriots now. He ain't coming back to Indiana. But I think to answer the question, to give people full context, that, between Terry Stotts and what happens with Mike Budenholz is probably where the Patriots are living at. If not those two guys, because, again, they ain't coming here for free, there might be potentially be an assistant that's already on our staff right now.
Okay. Just to kind of get some detail for the people who didn't see earlier, some of the tweets. Bjorkman was informed today of the decision to dismiss him. Sources say he met with management on Tuesday. The Pacers are expected to pursue a more experienced, established head coach in this process. Bjorkman lost the locker room and much of the organization in his 1 year as coach. Terry Stotts is very clearly the prime candidate to take over. The Blazers moved on from him after 9 seasons on Friday. He replaced, actually, Nate McMillan there in 2012. He's a graduate of Bloomington North High School, still due to be paid by the Blazers the next 2 years. So that might help Indiana a little bit on the pay, that they maybe can extend Stotts' payments out to backdate it towards the end of the contract, possibly. People did complain. I had, Mark Monteith. I actually have been talking to Mark Monteith on Twitter, going back and forth, because he talked about how horrible the defensive deficiency rating has been for the Blazers during the Terry Stotts time. Yes, they've been very offensive coordinated, but also they've dealt with a lot of injuries over that time as well. Nurkic, with him being out, they were, 27th, 28th or so in defensive efficiency. The offense was never an issue with the Portland Trailblazers. The problem with there was a defense, but when Nurkic came back from injury, they jumped all the way up to number 9 and number 7 in defensive rating with Nurkic coming back. So I don't want to hear, as I told Monteith, I don't want to hear that, Terry Stotts has a bad defense. You know what? It's definitely the personnel. And then he even just tweeted me back, no question, personnel factors are into it. The fact they ranked 20th or below in 5 of the previous 9 seasons, though, indicates that it's been a shortcoming. It has been, but what hasn't it in this type of league right now where it's all offensive driven? They've had a juggernaut of an offensive team, and if that's what Indiana's kind of looking for, you've got your smorgasbord. Here's another thing, John. Do we go back down? I'm going to throw out 3 more candidates besides those two that I really, really like. Do they go back out, and if you really want to worry about offense and you want to, you've already kicked the tires once in a meeting, Mike D'Antoni again, do we go down that route one more time? The fact you've got your offense, you know what to expect, and if you want to go shoot for 150, 160 points a game, hell, you might as well bring the doctor of it all, D'Antoni, back in here. I think that's more of a longer shot as well. Not too sure. The other two options, 3 options I have, I had him listed the last time the Pacers were looking, was Kenny Atkinson, right now assistant coach with the Clippers. I had him as one of our candidates last time during this process 10 months ago. You got to think about Atkinson there. And the last two, Dan Burke, I would see if he would be willing to come kick the tires back as the head coach. He was with Indiana for so long as a defensive juggernaut. He has that experience. Does he have the respect of the players? I hope so. But Dan Burke, can we get him from the Philadelphia 76ers to come and say, hey, take over the Pacers? I like that as a possible option. And my final one, I've always liked him since back in the day when he was with Frank Vogel's staff. And Jay Michael said today that if you have to give a dark horse who the Pacers like, who Pacers ownership and management like as a dark horse to come in, Brian Shaw. Brian Shaw was the lead associate head coach with the Indiana Pacers back during the Frank Vogel era. Jay Michael said, there's a dark horse right there. If you think ownership loved him, Pacers management loves him, Brian Shaw has that credibility. He could come in here and lead the Indiana Pacers. Now, he had a horrible stint in Denver when he left Indiana. Right. But that's another name to watch out for.
I don't have anybody's particular stats right now in front of me, man. But like, guys always forget about when you get your second chance in the big seat, you know what I mean? Everybody doesn't necessarily – I got one, Don Nelson. Don Nelson, before he got to Golden State, and even before those teams he had in Dallas, when he had Dirk and Steve Nash, before he got to – before he had success in both those programs, man, he kind of – he I won't say toil, but he had some low seasons in Milwaukee as a head coach. He has some low seasons around the league, man. So you can never underestimate giving a guy a second chance in the Big C, especially if they have great rapport and hell, especially ex-players for sure. You know what I'm saying? Brian Sharpe, somebody like his, it's the credibility he has playing for the Lakers. Why not?
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. Obviously, here's another thing. And by the way, I guess we're not off the cuff, but just listen to some of the idiotic comments made by some people in the media or radio hosts. I'm talking about my voicemail to you I sent today personally to you. This dumbass thinking Rick Pitino. Oh my God, coming here in Indiana. And this is the same guy that will bitch at everybody online or on the phone and say, you're a dumbass for spitballing those names. You're the dumbass spitballing it now. Like,
right.
Really? Are we going to sit here talk about Rick Pitino? Are we going to talk about Brad Stevens? He said Mike Woodson. Come on. Come on!
Right, who just got the IU? Who everybody already had like question marks about? Like, why are they coaching? Why would they pick him?
I had to turn it off.
To come
he has no idea. Good. He's so far gone from the narrative. He still thinks Stan Van Gundy is available to coach. Stan Van Gundy's been a head coach. He's coaching in New Orleans. Why the hell would he come here?
New Orleans.
You know, but just hearing
I've already grind my axe with Dan Dockage, me and him. I'm probably one of those guys that help usher him off of Twitter. You know what I'm saying?
I had a lot of people go to my side today. I put that on Twitter. I had like six different people tell me that, he's an idiot. He's a dumbass. You know, I said, wow, I actually don't go after Dan very much like you. But
Yeah, it was a daily thing with me and Dan for a long time. Obviously, Dan got in trouble, you know what I'm saying, with somebody else. And, you know what I'm saying, now I think his ESPN ties with ESPN has been cut. He kind of alludes to it every now and then. I still listen to his show. He does have some valid points when it comes down to breaking, especially when he has Seth Greenberg on there.
Yeah.
That's the only time I really listen to the show, Brandon, to be honest with you. When he has Seth Greenberg and the one football guy, he used to play for the Chargers, quarterback. I want to say Kingsbury, but that's not his name. But anyway, outside of that, man, you should filter what you need.
Salisbury?
I know you do. I'm just saying. Filter. Who's that?
Sean Salisbury?
Yeah, Sean Salisbury. Anytime you have Seth Greenberg or Sean Salisbury, I listen with wide open ears, man, because usually with, you know what I'm saying, you're getting straight up knowledge. And
let me ask you this about him. And I didn't want this to be the Dan Dockage hour at all. So my question was something he made today.
Brandon, he listens to the show, believe me. I ain't saying that cocky. I'm saying I know they do. But go ahead.
Malcolm Brogdon. He brought up Malcolm Brogdon about just being a coach killer. That he was when he got drafted. He got Jason Kidd fired. When he was with Milwaukee, they didn't re-sign him after he won Rookie of the Year. There was a reason why, a riff with Budenholz. And then he gets here, McMillan gets fired, that he's good enough to get you fired. So the Brogdon thing may not, you know, we don't know the truth about Malcolm Brogdon, what kind of person he is behind the scenes, you know?
Right.
Is he a coach killer? Is he not? And obviously, there's something why Milwaukee went, thought Drew, or Eric Bledsoe was a better player than Malcolm Brogdon at that time. That's what they wanted. If you're the Indiana Pacers, here's my question. If you're the Indiana Pacers GM, you have to make a splash, right? We talked about this. You have to make a splash as a head coach because now your head's starting to become on the chopping block. You're paying off two coaches. There's a report today that Kemba Walker and the Boston Celtics are nearing the breakup. Walker was upset after Danny Ainge tried to trade him for Jrue Holiday. He felt like, hey, why are you trading? You got me. So he felt he has bad feelings, that he wants out. Kemba's got 3 years left on his deal. Malcolm Brogdon's got 3 years left on his deal. The Pacers are looking for a true point guard. If you're Pritchard, mm-hmm. do you try to pull a trade with the Boston Celtics and Brad Stevens and them now to maybe trade Malcolm Brogdon to Boston for Kemba Walker? I know there's a $13 million difference in salary. I tried it on NBA Trade Machine. So you have to throw in another player here or there. I thought Jeremy Lamb, mm-hmm. throwing him in, that'd give you $10 million. That would offset it and make it work. But if you're Pritchard and you're wanting to make this offensive splash and you need that true point guard you talked about, do you make this trade of Brogdon for Kemba Walker that you know he's unhappy in Boston and wants out?
I got to see Kemba Walker's x-rays. I got to see his MRIs. I know Malcolm Brogdon misses a lot of time every year, seemingly. He's missed a lot of time even when he was with the Bucks. I think that was also part of the divorce from the Bucks as well. You mentioned Bledsoe and him. Bledsoe's a better defensive player. Brogdon's a better offensive player. They couldn't make it work with Bledsoe. I'm sorry, they couldn't make it work with either one, right? Because Bledsoe couldn't hit the outside shot to save his life. And like I said, the Bucks are committed to playing defense, and that's something that's not Malcolm Brogdon. I don't know. When you talk about Kemba Walker, Kemba Walker is a name that carries over from Connecticut, does it not? We remember him, what he did in UConn and the Big East. We remember what he did for the Bobcats. And he is the all-star for sure. Is he ready for a fresh start? You know what I mean? Those are kind of some of the things I would ask. Is Kemba ready for a fresh start? Because there was also rumors about him coming here when he was a free agent as well. The Pacers want to invest their type of money in him or whatnot. They need to do something. I see what you're saying. They need to do something to shake up the roster. All the Twitter nerds will tell you, sorry, nerds, if you are. All the Twitter nerds will tell you that you need to automatically trade Sabonis or Miles Turner. But what's crazy about that, Brandon, is that every team, whether it's the Knicks, you follow the rumors too, the Knicks, the Portland Trailblazers, the Boston Celtics themselves, Charlotte Hornets, they all want Miles Turner. The only team that doesn't want Miles Turner is seemingly the team that doesn't know how to properly use him. You know what I mean? And that, what I mean by properly using him, he's not a small forward, so don't be putting him in small forward situations on the floor. You know what I'm saying? He's a power forward. You got to make it work. Nate McMillan, I know that's still milk. Nate McMillan made it. He figured out a way to make it work. There's got to be a way to make it work better. You know what I'm saying? I think there's some spin doctors out there. maybe, like you said, allude to Dan Burke. Dan Burke had the defense playing better overall. Again, if it takes him to be a head coach, then maybe we entertain that. You know what I mean? But as far as the player personnel, they need to do something because what they have right now, you know what I'm saying? I know King of Trolls comes on here, Reggie Sykes, talking about moving Malcolm Brogdon over to shooting guard. That doesn't make me – you know what I'm saying? That doesn't move the meter for me. You know what I'm saying? Because he still got to defend, and he's not a sound defender. And this is Indiana. We kind of want somebody who's going to be able to make stops. The team needs somebody. We can't depend upon Malcolm. But how many times did D-Cock call in here? How many times did me and you talk about when Malcolm Brogdon is the only one that can? Miles Turner is the only one that can play defense, and if we didn't have him. Then, I get it. You know what I'm saying? He's a human eraser, all this, that, and
right.
But he also has to be a better impactful guy on the defensive and offensive boards. And we also have to have better guard play so that he doesn't have to be that guy that gets four blocks. Why is he always getting four blocks per game? Why is he average four blocks per game? That's because guys, you know what I'm saying, zooming around. They're getting beat. So we have to – so, again – if he's a guy that's constantly getting beat, and I know me and you argued about Victor Oladipo and Darren Collison and them not replacing him or them trading Victor Oladipo or whatever, they didn't get beat. And if they did get beat, you know what I'm saying, if you look at Miles Turner's stats, it was two shots per game instead of four. You see what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. you brought in more offensive-minded players, but you didn't necessarily they didn't want to get in the stands. So there's two sides. You got to play all facets of the game to go win. So it just kind of depends, Brandon. They do need to make a bigger splash. They do. They will have a pretty good – I think – I know the lottery hasn't necessarily worked itself out just yet as far as, like, where the Pacers are picked. I think, you know what I'm saying, this is with my Magic 8 ball in front of me, the Pacers will probably get no worse than 14th. I think it'll be somewhere between 11 and 14. Okay? What you do there does help, does factor. So, again, the MVP of the league was the second round. The MVP of the league this year was a second rounder. Right?
Drafted during a Taco Bell commercial.
Right. Drafted during a Taco Bell commercial. Jokic is the second rounder. You can get impact players. Everybody that's 1 through 5 isn't necessarily the, you know, saying the guy that you want anyway, or the guy that's going to work out for you anyway. More often than times it is, but sometimes, you know, there's times that it isn't. So that with a winning organization, and the Pacers are a winning organization. I know we give them a hard time. We give them a hard time because we want to see them win more. We want to get back to the Reggie Miller days when they kind of lived in the playoffs, right? We want to get back to even the, I know you're on a cringe. We want to get to that, the pre. PG-13 days, you know what I'm saying, where they won and kind of lived in the playoffs, playing Chicago Bulls, playing the Miami Heat every year. You know what I'm saying? That's what we want to kind of get back to. We're tired of having these early round exits, right? Or having these seasons, regular seasons, where you win some and you lose more. You know what I mean? That's kind of what, so you got to bring in, you got to be smart, you got to be smart about who you bring in. And you can get, there is value. And picking in the teens, in the late teens, and even in the 20s, when you think about Donovan Mitchell and where he was selected, when you or even some of the other guys from around the league. So, but again, okay, to your point, if D'Antoni's coming, then you keep everybody as it is. You do. I say that, but I don't know if it'll work with Sabonis and D'Antoni. Okay, so then what are you there? So you're back to the same thing. You're going to end up trading somebody to get a splash. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And talking about D'Antoni's system. So I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying? You don't want to sacrifice the farm just because you're bringing a different farmer. So
right.
Yeah, I would. It got a hard look, man. And all this, man. I'm gonna pick on the Colts for like one time. We said the Colts season. It Carson Wentz better play well, or is Frank Reich's ass, my personal opinion.
Jonathan Bergeron can only bring it back to the Colts.
So the same thing would be said about Kevin Pritchard. Whoever he hires and whatever team they put out there, if they do a run back, okay, this is a run back. It better look different than the last year. It better. But if you make a trade and you send Brockham, if you trade the guy that the rookie that you bring in that I said, that I'm guaranteed, I looked at my Magic 8-Ball Crossroad Sports listening audience. The Pacers shouldn't pick no less than 14. I'm telling you right now. I might have said 12, but I'm telling you they should pick no less than 14, between somewhere in 11 and 14, based on their record, right, and how the lottery works out. Whoever they bring in better be a stud that you can see, oh, okay. Day one, not day two, not day three, a stud, day one. And whoever you select to go out, whether it be Sabonis or Turner or even Malcolm Brogdon, whatever you get back, it better be the goods, and it better work day one. Or Kevin Pritchard, this time next year, will be out, and somebody else will be running the show.
Okay. yeah, big Pacers talk. First 40 minutes of the show, Pacers, love it. We'll see what happens there. I'm sure we'll get to it. It'll come up again at some point. So I have no problem, because right now that's what we got to talk about. Indiana Pacers, our local team, we're passionate about it. We all want winners just as much as you guys do. So we'll see what happens. John, fast looking ahead to the other side of it, from a team that's not in the playoffs and trying to find a head coach and their identity, to the teams that are in the playoffs. Kevin Durant, John, I sent you a text. I think Kevin Durant's playing the best basketball of his career right now. My God, he put the sizzler on Giannis the other night a few times. It put him in the spin cycle, some people would call it, in the washing machine. I think Durant's playing the best ball of his life. They're kicking ass without James Harden. I don't think there's this way stopping this team. I really don't. I've been on him since before the playoffs.
Yep. It kind of makes me have to. I'm glad Skip Mills didn't text me, because he was the one to give me a hard time about the Bucks, right? Not to be name dropping, folks, but like, no, man, this is not the Bucks. This is not the Bucks that played all season. This is not the Bucks that made adjustments from the past two seasons. They got Giannis playing point guard. Giannis, they had during the mid part of the season, they put the ball more so on. That's where he had, like, I think he had like 5 triple doubles in a row, something crazy like that. But these triple doubles were based like up in the half court, to where he would get double teams and then find the open guard to cut, or he would find the guy, the right guy to cut to pass out in a, to pass out for a three. The what I saw, the game two, they totally went. They should be disappointed in game one. Game one, they went away from what made them special. What makes the Bucks special is against the Nets anyway, is that they have an obvious advantage at power forward. They have an obvious advantage at center, and in the second half, they went away from it. At the second half, Brook Lopez, I know you at one point wanted him to be a Pacer, and I'm looking at him like, damn, man, maybe he could be. You know what I'm saying? His hands are a little garbage for me, as far as, like, you know what I'm saying, being strong with the ball. But, like, hey, man, he knows how to play. He knows, like, I'm a seven-footer. I need to get my big butt down on the block to get easy baskets. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He didn't. And again, Budenholzer in previous years turning him to a three-point shooter. Budenholzer in previous years had Giannis, playing for jump shots and taking, you know what I'm saying, settling rather for jump shots. And, like, all this year, they curbed all that. They changed all that up. Play to your advantage. Everything kind of game two, everything that they kind of worked for went straight out the window. They went back to the same old Bucks. Again, there could be a way. Defensively, I don't know if they did the right thing. Defensively, they went to a zone. That was kooky to me. Like, you can't, Brandon, I know I'm talking 100 miles an hour. Brandon, you cannot outshoot this Brooklyn Nets team. It's not going to happen to outshoot them from outside. My personal opinion, if I was the coach, you let Kevin Durant do what Kevin Durant's do. We ain't letting Mike James. We ain't letting Shamet. We ain't letting lesser players, whoever. We're not letting lesser players beat us. So if you got a double team Kevin Durant, it better be him going to the bucket, right, and sending to the foul line. I'm not letting none of the lesser players get hot. Tyler Johnson, none of those – I'm not calling them scrubs. None of those lesser players. But they automatically send a double team. Kevin Durant is not playing selfish basketball, and actually Kyrie Irving is playing smart basketball now. They're making an extra pass, and all those guys they got are lethal shooters. They're great shooters, for that matter. So
right.
Defensively, defensively, the Milwaukee Bucks have gotten away from themselves. They've turned into the past two seasons of Milwaukee Bucks. Not this season. This season they would clamp it down. This season they would do the exact same thing that Brooklyn was doing to them. You got a guy that's going to the bucket. Oh, okay, we're going to block the lane. You ain't going to be able to do all this. But Giannis didn't do himself a favor. Like, when's the last time you seen Giannis go one-on-one with anybody? Top of the key. That's crazy. You're playing right into their hands. So, Blake Griffin, you wanting the referee to make a call, and it ain't like – shame on Blake Griffin for stealing money from the Detroit Pistons. I hope K-Face can make the call again, so we can talk about that. Shame on Blake Griffin. Now some of that kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth, because he turned a switch on because he didn't play that. People say that he was a shadow of his former self, and he is. He's not Lob City Blake Griffin, but he didn't.
I wonder. I saw one the other night on Giannis.
Right. He didn't. He's not. But think about the last couple seasons in Detroit. He's looked like Jonathan Birdsong, Lob City,
uh-oh,
and that ain't Lob City. You know what I mean? So, you know, you can say that now he sees the prize and he wants to play. But, like, damn, man, play like that for whoever you playing for. You see what I'm saying? But all that's not necessarily noise. All that kind of just goes into the story of the Brooklyn Nets. Again, they are committed. They took the Milwaukee Bucks. They made the Milwaukee Bucks play like they played the last two seasons and took away from their team aspect of the quick shots. Brent Forbes, I love him. He's a guy from Michigan State. He's an athletic guy who's turned himself into a player. But, like, you're not a quick shot guy, Brent Forbes. In the first game, he was out there trying to outshoot Kyrie Irving. Pat Connaughton,
yeah.
Are you serious? Pat Connaughton. Like, if you get four shots, you better hit all four of them. You know,
Jonathan Birdsong calling out the Milwaukee Bucks tonight. Calling them out.
I am. Because, like, they play great team basketball. They play through their star players. Their star player is Giannis. The secondary tier player would be, like, their advantage. Their advantage. I'm not saying Brook Lopez is a star. But, hell, at one point, I do believe he at least made one all-star team. So, hell, that makes him at least on Rick Smith's level, right? But that's about when he played for Brooklyn. But, like, no. They don't play to their advantage. So, again, why aren't – it's like bug to me. And then, I ain't forgot about Uncle Drew. Uncle Drew turned into his little brother, Aaron Holiday. You know what I'm saying? On some possessions.
Oh,
so,
my
again,
God.
It wasn't the Milwaukee Bucks that I watched all season. It wasn't the Milwaukee Bucks that made themselves the third seed in the East. You know what I'm saying? When you look at comparatively, you look at what – and he's on one knee. He's on a knee tear. When you look at what Joel Embiid, he does – in the Philadelphia 76ers, they were getting blown out game one, but they still went to Joel. And they still – they didn't go away from – they didn't start isolating Joel. They put his big self on the block, and they played to their strengths. And they kind of got back into it. They played good defense up here, and they turned the ball. They turned the Hawks over. But game two, they out the gate. They went to Joel. They made it a point. This is what is going to happen. We're going to make sure if you're going to beat us, then he's going to get 40. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know, man. It really was frustrating to watch the Milwaukee Bucks. The first game, they messed up. They jacked their Mac, as you know what I'm saying, street term. They blew it. Again, because they only lost by like 8 points. So
right.
Again, you think about some of the free throws they missed. I ain't talking about Giannis. I'm talking about Holiday going over. You know what I'm saying, a guard who shoots in the 80s, missing free throws. You know what I mean? I'm talking about turnovers. When a team that doesn't actually turn the ball over with high proficiency, man, again, they beat themselves. The second game, once it got down to 10, they quit. They mentally quit. I'm not saying they physically quit. They mentally quit because, again, they were trying to outshoot, they were trying to outshoot one of the greatest shooters of Kevin Durant. And you know what I'm saying, Giannis, the greatest defensive player he is, that's around the rim, not in space. So, again, they went away from totally from what makes them special, and that's shame on them. That's why they're down 0-2.
Okay. Do they have a chance to come back?
They better play. You know what's weird, Brandon? The first game they played, and the referee, shame on them, man. Again, I tweeted the NBA. I don't know what a foul is, right? The referees tucked their whistles. They did. Now, Blake Griffin fouled out. 6 fouls. On a named star caliber like Blake Griffin got fouled out right before the game was over. Kevin Durant should have fouled out. He really should have. Kevin Durant had 5 fouls, and because of the physicality of the game, there was a lot of – so think about it. The swipe through – I'm trying to take everybody through the game. The swipe through was a foul that he got on Giannis. I think that was like Giannis' third. That was before the end of the – that was before the end of the second half. Kevin Durant had 2 fouls already. The next play – They ran Brook Lopez straight down the middle. They only had like 2 seconds left on the clock. Brook Lopez ran straight down the middle. He ran straight to the rim. The passer on the inbound threw it right to him. Kevin Durant had contact. He hits the shot, and his time expired. Referee tucked their whistle. That would have gave Kevin Durant his 4th foul before the half. You know what I'm saying? So, again, he ended up with 5. But the referees tucked their whistle. Somebody could say, well, Giannis kind of plowed over the guys. Offensive foul calls are very interpretive. They really are. But defensive fouls, if you sneeze on a guy, on a superstar. No, I didn't say superstar. If you sneeze on a guy, they're calling foul. So, but Kevin Durant got some all-star calls there. He really did. But game two, none of that even mattered because, again, they got down – the Milwaukee Bucks got down 10, and they just kind of wilted.
Let me ask you this.
So, yeah, they got a chance. They got a chance, but they got to play with some intensity.
And we'll leave this short, just maybe a 1-minute answer on this question.
Sweet.
What was your thoughts on my assessment that Giannis is like a Lamar Jackson-esque? Great. Let me preface it. It's a great, great regular season, but when it comes to the postseason – and your strengths are really what it should be, a solid shooter from 18 feet, 15 feet to even 3-pointers, getting that like shot as the shot clock's coming down where you can depend on this guy to shoot a shot like a Kevin Durant, like Giannis, like Lamar Jackson when it comes down to the playoffs, having to be in that pocket deep throw to make those deep passes. I think mm-hmm. they're about the same. They're both great regular season. It comes to playoffs. When you need to step up in your certain areas,
you know
they're not there.
You said 1 minute, Brandon. You was trying to get in trouble with the Steelers and Ravens fans, man, by saying Lamar. Everybody knows you're a Steelers fan. You're just trying to rub it in because Lamar and them scored 12 points in the playoffs the last time out. Man, I'll give that a little bit of credence, man. He's not vocal enough as a leader on that team. I'll put it to you like that. Who is the vocal leader on the court for this team? You don't necessarily see that out of Giannis. That would be my answer. But you ain't slick with this Lamar Jackson crap. You're trying to trap on the Ravens fans that listen to the show. And rightfully,
listen, I'm not the only one that said this. I feel like I had my stuff stolen. They were talking about it on the Dan Patrick show this morning. So somebody stole my idea from yesterday about it. So I need credit from the NBC Dan Patrick show. All right, looking ahead. Also, let's go Clippers, Jazz, last night, game one. Clippers had a hell of a series against Luka and Dallas and went 7 games. The home team finally won in game 7. Clippers come out last night. They start out great. I watched the first quarter and a half and then went to bed. I wake up and we've got another Paul George 4-for-17. Shooting.
Damn.
You get a good PG in game 7 last series, and then he shits the bed, pardon my French, in game 1, 4-17. Clippers, he doesn't want any more Joe Ingles. I put on Twitter. He knows that nightmare.
Man, the Paul George redemption tour, we still waiting on it, man. I don't know. I think maybe some of it, Brandon, is that him and Kawhi Leonard naturally play the small four position. And with him and Kawhi Leonard have to play with each other, Paul George kind of shifted more over to the shooting guard spot in the spots for shooting guard. But again, he had 17 shots. You get 20 points and 17 shots. That's not efficient. He missed three-pointers. He's missed free throws. Yes, he got rebounds. Larry Bird asked him to get rebounds 1,000 years ago. It's something he kind of shunned away from. So now it kind of rings true what Larry Bird was saying, man, you know. I'm tired of beating down Paul George. You know what I'm saying? I've stopped calling him the choke artist.
I'm not.
I mean, other people, I know you're not. I know other people are getting on me for calling him the choke artist and whatnot. I'm gonna stop. I don't necessarily have a dog in this fight between them and Utah. What the Clippers do, and I said this before, even last year when they had the time when they had the handful with Jamal Murray, the Clippers, whoever it is, have a hard time guarding scoring point guards. Jamal Murray went off on them, and that's why they got bounced. Luka last year went off on them, and then this year took them to 7. I think if Luka has the ultimate green light, and I think sometimes he guns out his teammates. If he doesn't necessarily gun out his teammates in game 6, I think we're not even talking about it. We're talking about the Clippers in a different light. You know what I mean? But again, think some of Paul George's struggles is because he's a natural shooting guard. And like I said, him and that's something. I mean, he's a natural small forward, and that position is kind of owned by Kawhi Leonard. Yeah, they play together pretty seemingly well, but they can't. This team, whoever it is, I don't think
Reggie Jackson is not a number 3 scorer. Stop being like it.
Oh, no.
Absolutely not.
But I still think even after this game, I still think they bounce back. I'm not saying I don't think they bounce back till they get to back to LA to force it to like 6 or 7. But Paul George, the inconsistent play of Paul George is consistently going to be an albatross, an anchor for this team, and it's going to be one that you know they're not going to win until he gets it together.
Yeah, playoff Kennard has stepped it up.
Who's that?
Playoff Kennard.
If you play him, hell yeah, he'll step up, man. That's on Tyronn Lue. Tyronn Lue doesn't think Luke Kennard can defend, so that's why he didn't play in the first round or play sparingly in the first round. But
keeping him in the game.
Right. As you can see, you know, get him out there and he produces. So, again, man, you know, everybody knows, listen to the show, we're Duke guys here. He showed out. He showed him. We had like 20 last night on great shooting, 7-for-8.
Oh yeah. Here's a thing for you. Here's a little stat for everybody to remember. And everybody says I give Paul George crap all the time and nothing positive. Hey, here's my positive. Here's your crazy stat of the night. Paul George won a playoff series in the Staples Center before LeBron James did. Let that sink in. LeBron James has never won a playoff series in the Staples Center since being a Laker. Paul George has.
Well, they won championships.
Yeah, in a bubble, which some people may say isn't a real championship, but I'm not going to go there because I'm a LeBron James stan, so I ain't going to go there with that. Let me ask you, Luka Doncic expected a supermax $200 million. I don't think you have a question. I don't have a question either. Well deserved. Give it to him.
Yeah. He'll get it.
You got to get him some help, though. He's got to have more help besides Hardaway.
You got to get him some help, and you might also have to really mend this a little bit. I think he has the ultimate green light, and he does take bad shots from time to time to be neo-critical of his game. But just to, like, watch it, man. Again, sometimes the bench guys, they don't even get a shot. They'll get in rotation, like, you know, Carlisle will play them, but they won't get a shot in because Luka is going, 12 for 30.
Right.
And I get what you're saying. He'll end up with like 40 because he makes his trip to the free throw line, but that throws guys off just a little bit.
Okay. Lakers. Lakers lost game six at home. LeBron, AD got hurt. Caruso got hurt. It was just falling apart. LeBron, you can tell he kind of quit towards the end. Post-game presser, he talked more about his damn playing with the Monstars and stuff than he did actually talking about the loss for the Lakers. Thoughts on L.A. bowing out that early?
Man, here's what I said about this, Brandon, because I don't want to get into the Michael Jordan versus the Brian.
I agree.
Kobe Bryant. I don't. He's going to do and say what he wants to say and not how Michael Jordan said it or how Kobe Bryant said it or anybody else. So
number six next year, by the way. You know what that means.
He changed the number. That means also going to be some teammate change, too.
Yeah, Miami Heat, LeBron's coming out, and he was dominant. So that's my hot take for next season. Coming out for blood.
Here's what you can like, man. He didn't make no excuses about him being
hurt. Yes, he did. As much as I love LeBron James, he did make an excuse was BS. Well, it's just been a grind since playing in the bubble to here. It's been for everybody. Like, I love LeBron, but damn it, he's making so many excuses that's giving
Brandon,
all the hate more fuel.
He didn't specifically say, "Hey, I got a bad ankle." And
correct.
Everybody, if anybody who's a smart mark like we are, watch the games. Like LeBron couldn't, and I said this on last show, he could not recover defensively. All right. So offensively, obviously when the ball's in your hand, and I don't think he could do some of the things, he set up for a lot of outside jump shots, which is not – that ain't what got them a championship last year.
Right.
The AD injury also, again, anybody can – tons of people have come at timeline look the day after they lost. You seen all the memes.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of people coming at me.
Ain't that – to me, that's damn near overboard. And, like, I don't even feed into it, Brandon, because, again, the smart mark comes out into me. And I get it. He doesn't say the things like Michael Jordan would say, or he doesn't play. He shot – would you be happy? No. If he shot 44 times and only hit 12 times, they was like, oh, man, he's a brick. He's out here laying bricks and he gunned out the team.
Right.
He can't win. He cannot win. So talking about the Monstars or talking about next season or change the number, I really got no problem with it. Some people say that he's drawing attention to himself. Again, all these dudes are attention hungry kind
of
guys.
All of them are.
Durant, you know what I mean? But changes are coming. How about that? Changes are coming. Magic Johnson, who can't keep a secret, his damn self, says that there's some Lakers, and even though he's not in the organization, general manager wise, he's adjacent to it, right? He said, in the organization, some players probably won't be here.
How about Pat Riley getting fined for tampering?
Right, sure. But I think Darren Schroeder probably won't be there, and Andre Drummond probably won't be there. And that means that,
sure.
Whoever comes in You know what I'm saying? There'll be pressure on them, but those two guys probably won't be in Lakers next year for sure.
For sure. All right, John, we're going to do a quick ad read. When we come back, we'll continue our NBA playoff talk and a lot more. Be right back after these messages.
You've changed thousands of diapers, cut off hundreds of crusts, played hours of peekaboo and duck, duck, goose because you'd do anything for your kids. That's why it's so important to protect them with life insurance from State Farm. State Farm insurance agent Scott K. Nichols will help make it easy and affordable to help protect your family no matter what the future holds. Because for the people you'd do anything for, life insurance could mean everything. Call State Farm agent Scott K. Nichols in Indianapolis today at 317-243-3509. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Also, we're going to thank our sponsor, Maverick Custom Motorsports, where ideas are created, dreams are born, specializing in motorcycles, boats, slingshot, jeeps, and trucks, offering pickups, deliveries, and shipping worldwide. Check us out today, MaverickCustomMotorsports.com, for all your needs. They've got custom motorcycle builds, custom audio accessory installs, LED lighting, custom wheels. They carry all the top brands and much more. Check them out, MaverickCustomMotorsports.com. Okay, John, we are back. Thank you to our sponsors. Also, John, looking ahead, and I took money on this. I actually took the Atlanta Hawks money line first game. Money line and spread first game. I just had a feeling Philly was going to lay an egg and Atlanta was going to come out and play. Atlanta just took it to them in game one. Philly comes back in game two. I like the Phillies. I still would not be shocked if Atlanta wins the series. Would not be shocked.
I would not be shocked. The only sucky part of this, man, is that if everything kind of falls into place, man, the Brooklyn Nets, again, the Hawks aren't disciplined enough to even win a game against, my personal opinion, my personal set, against Brooklyn. They have shown poise for being such a young team. They have shown some poise and some moxie for that matter, into going into hostile environments like the Knicks, and like, you know what I'm saying, like the Garden, and even like Philadelphia, because we know those fans are nuts. So they're darn self. Sorry if we lose anybody in Philadelphia, but that is what it is. There was still a chance they could have won last night. They got down. They came back. I think it was like a 1-point difference at halftime. But like I said in the second before, Philadelphia didn't go away from their strength, and that's Joel Embiid. Atlanta did this due diligence. They stole a game in Philadelphia. It's possible that, you know, San Philadelphia still has won back on their home court, but I think the Hawks, defend their court, and I think they win the next two games. I didn't foresee the Hawks sweeping. I didn't really foresee the 76ers sweeping the Hawks.
Right.
It's just a good matchup. We think about some of the frontline play that they have with Capella, Okongwu. I'm talking about going against Joel Embiid. They got and even John Collins. They have a lot of, you know what I'm saying, guys, defenders, and even guys that Joel Embiid has to account for in that Philadelphia front line. I mean, in that Atlanta Hawks front line, and then. You can't take away the play from the young and emerging, and he's ready for it. He likes to smoke in Trae Young, man. They gotta figure out their turnover situation. That's kind of what they also take a lot of quick shots, poor shots as well. I couldn't believe
it hurts some DeAndre Hunter's out for the rest of the playoffs too.
Yeah. And yeah, they made them turn to Solomon Hill. Oh my God, I thought he was done. he's still collecting Pacer checks, right? But like, no, man, I like the poise. I like the moxie that the Hawks have shown. Obviously, that has to speak to what Nate McMillan has kind of put in place. I think he's deserving of a contract. I know they need to take the interim portion off his, you know, the interim coach Nate, and make it Nate McMillan head coach. Whether that turns into him getting to a Eastern Conference Finals or even to a Finals, that remains to be seen. But he has these Atlanta Hawks playing like, dude, we talked about it early in the season. We had them at eighth at best, eighth, because we thought they had too many freaking small forwards. But like, no, man, he's turned them in. Like now they're like, you know, say a couple games away from winning. and going to the Eastern Conference Finals, which is like nobody would guess at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh boy. Okay. I was just reading something. Looking, John, we'll see what I got on here. I think that's all NBA-wise I have. Only took an hour and 5 minutes for us to get through it all, but that's what we expect in NBA. Julio Jones traded from the Atlanta Falcons to the Titans. AFC South, hey, Colts fans, now you got Julio to deal with across from A.J. Brown. But Tannehill's still your quarterback, so I don't know if you're going to feel bad. Some wide receivers going to teams make a big difference. Does this one with Julio going there probably has, what, 2-3 years of great talent still left?
Can you stay healthy? Can you stay 100%?
I think so.
Is Tannehill a good down the field passer as Matty Ice? A lot of those questions, I would say no. I can't believe this is where he just kind of ended up at, not necessarily where he wanted to go. You know what I mean? He's got 2 years left, I think, maybe on his contract. So I don't think he's not necessarily ready to retire. This is kind of where the trade winds kind of blew him to. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not saying he hasn't necessarily been a guy to just kind of check in and check out. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like how the coach took my guy from the Texans, and it was horrible. The wideout, what's that guy's name? Brandon, the Hall of Fame wideout. He played a long time for the Texans. Played 1 year for the Colts.
Andre Johnson.
They couldn't wait to get rid of him. They couldn't wait to get him. So I don't think we necessarily see an Andre Johnson type of season out of Julio. But it doesn't scare me as a Colts fan. I already know, Brandon. Again, because we kind of already discussed, man, the Titans and the Colts will be the two teams vying for supremacy of the AFC South. What more concerns me about the Colts is the player Carson Wentz and what he can or can't do. So
okay.
Julio, I'm glad he got on the winning squad, but it's not going to necessarily move a meter for them or me.
Okay. John, Nick Saban signs a extension with Alabama through 2028.
Nice.
He's going to die on the court, or he's going to be dying on the football field in Alabama.
Will he ever be happy? Will he ever get up? Will he ever have a 17-3 lead at halftime, and he goes over to Susie Colbert, or he goes over to, you know what I'm saying, whoever, and says, you know what, I'm happy. I don't think so. And that's why they gave him a contract for life, man, because he's never happy. He's always wanting, you know what I'm saying, to make sure games are far, far, far out of, you know what I'm saying, that they're winning and they're far, far out of contention for the following team, man. Kudos to Nick Saban. He runs a great historical Hall of Fame program, and that's what they've extended him for.
Okay. We do have a call, John. I got to bring up his intro music, and then we'll bring him on.
With a tear in my eye. This is the greatest moment in my life.
And with that, the greatest moment, Fred Feldner, KFAB Connection, joins us. Fred, what's going on?
Good evening, fellas. How's it going?
Good, good, good.
I'm en route to Jet's Pizza for that. I'm en route to Jet's Pizza for that $5 Wednesday special.
Ooh, okay. We got Blaze Pizza tonight here. So shout out LeBron.
Nice. Yeah, shout out to fishing right now. Shout out to fishing and making Space Jam 2 right now.
Fred, I don't know how long you've been listening, man, but I did shoot your name out as far as Blake Griffin stealing money from the Pistons the last couple of seasons, especially after some of his last two games that we've seen him play for the Nets, man. What kind of have you watched that particular series, Nets and Bucks?
Oh, you already know, Bert. I'm a hoops fan, and especially now that the diva's gone, and now we can just enjoy the NBA playoffs without the hoopla and all the side antics. We can just, you know, watch basketball games. Yeah, absolutely. The Nets Bucks series, man, it's crazy. Like, I figured the Nets are going to be a better team, but man, like, when you win by 40, it's like,
Yeah.
It only perpetuates that stereotype that everybody has about Giannis, that he doesn't show up for the big ones, and he's a regular season
yep.
player, kind of the same thing as Dame Lillard. And it sucks because that kind of media stuff, I think, lends credence to this era of basketball where it's like Barney and Friends basketball, where we got to just link up with everybody. And I think a lot of that influence, I honestly think, is the media. Constantly, you know, you're at the barbershop, you're at home, you're driving, whatever, and you're constantly hearing about, Giannis is a regular season player, not a playoff player, and he'll never win the big one. And you just want to shut those people up so it's like win at any cost. I don't know. That's just me, spitballing here on a Wednesday. I fully believe that, though, that a lot of these talking head shows. I mean, if you think about it, we didn't really have this around back in the old early SportsCenter days, with
right.
Stu Scott and Rich Eisen on
right.
there and stuff like that. Like, we didn't – that was kind of it. But, like, even to now, these talking head shows, like, I'm just going to be blunt. Bruh, the Stanley Cup playoffs are going on right now. The Montreal Canadiens, one of the most storied hockey teams in hockey history – are having, like,
right.
a run of the ages right now. The New York Islanders, Nassau Coliseum is going to be
Let's go, Islanders.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I hate the Bruins. So anytime a Boston team loses, I'm real happy. I'm like Freddy Krueger when he kills a teenager and, like, the soul goes into him. That's how I am. Anytime
oh, wow.
a Boston team loses, yeah. That's
oh, man.
how I feel about
it. The angel gets his wings. The angel gets
his
wings,
right.
too.
Yeah, but yeah, like back in the day, we didn't have that stuff. And so now it's I honestly think it's just a lot of the hoopla and the antics surrounding basketball that's not even basketball that really dictates the sport. And you
right.
hate to see it,
yeah.
but, with that being said, yeah, Blake Griffin's a punk, and, there's a Detroit is a no-fly zone. I don't know if you and Brandon know this, but, yeah, Detroit is a no-fly zone. You can use your Google machine to figure out what that means. But, yeah, he's good luck coming back to Detroit.
I'll Google it, man. It just seems like he turned on a different switch to where, like I said, that switch was not there the last couple seasons. He had – I think I even said it a couple weeks ago, man. He has, like, 5 dunks in the last 2 years in Detroit. And I think he's had, like – at least 5 dunks in these first two rounds of playoffs play. So, again, not that dunks or something that, is the all-time list or anything like that. But, again, he looks like a more lively player now. And that kind of leaves a bad taste in some fans. I mean, I'm not necessarily a fan of the Pistons fan. I'm just saying, man, he stole money, dude.
Hey,
he
yeah, money, he's – we need a wanted, like one of those old Western signs. We need a wanted sign with Blake Griffin's like the old cowboy, like black and white, like, wanted. We need a wanted sign. He needs
oh,
to return
wow.
that money to Detroit. Return that money
right.
to Detroit. You better not show your face in the city again either. I know Brooklyn's
well,
going to be on the schedule at Little Caesars next season, so good luck with that, Blake.
Right. Well, hey, I know I still got – I've watched 80% of it, so I got to watch the rest of it. But either one of you watched the Bret Hart special on A&E?
Is that a real question
yeah.
to ask, John?
I know it's not a real question of you.
I've watched it twice. I've watched it twice.
Yeah, same. Absolutely. The best there is, the best there was, the best there will be.
Well, we'll just go around the table. What was your thoughts on it, Brandon?
Oh, I thought it was great. There's nothing different I didn't hear already from either him already in an interview or any other documentary he's been in. I thought it was done pretty well. I think they hit all with Stu, with him growing up and with Stu, the Hart family,
right.
to Vince even talking, even modern day Vince now talking with Bret Hart, and then obviously the screw job and how that went down. And then just kind of after Bret's retirement, after his injury against Goldberg, I love how he's still sour at Goldberg. I love that part. told me he was not a wrestler, doesn't have a wrestle.
Ruined his career, man.
Yeah, absolutely. But then
yeah,
you saw, and I think it was Natalia or somebody said it, the perfect quote on there was that Bret Hart lived to not survive, but I forget the exact quote, but he was able to get past wrestling peacefully, and now he's got his grandkids he's playing with. I liked seeing that part of it as well to kind of sum up the show. I thought that was a great, great part, way to end it. Talks about his new wife and that part. I really, really liked it. I don't want to hear it from me anymore. Fred, what was your thoughts on it?
So the thing that stuck out to me, I agree, Brandon. There wasn't really anything new to introduce to me as a huge Bret Hart fan. I got the chance to meet him. He signed WWF Magazine for me, and it's him putting Papa Shango on the sharpshooter. And this was right after he gave the 4 out of 10 promo about Triple H. And so I asked him what he gave the sharpshooter on the magazine. He said 10 out of 10. And that was tight. So, the thing that stuck out the most to me from the documentary was them saying that Bret Hart was the most credible champion in that company's history. I was thinking, Brandon was going over his answer, I was thinking this too, that who else could you argue? Because I agree, Bret Hart is the most legit champ they've had. I think the only person that could rival him would be someone who could bring it up to Kurt Angle. I think that's the only other name that you could say is a legitimate champ. And, you know, like, hey, I don't watch the product currently, but, like, Roman Reigns, what he's done with this storyline with the chief and the head of the table and acknowledgement, like, they're building him up. So they just want him to be a megastar, like, you know, Hogan Cena levels. So I commend him, but at the same time, it's like he has great wrestling matches. He's not a wrestling technician like a Bret Hart or a Kurt Angle. He has entertaining sports entertainment matches, and that's not to discredit him. It's just kind of – it goes along with that quote. So that was really the only thing that stood out. It still puts a sour feeling in my stomach when I see him talk about Owen. And what could have been, you know, and I think it's, at this point, I don't think it's, I think it's public record at this point. The game gimmick that Triple H ran with after he was being punished from the curtain call, that gimmick was supposed to go to Owen Hart. Owen Hart was supposed to be the game with the wild Sam Jackson, you know, Jackie Brown backwards leather Kangol and leather jacket, like sunglasses. Mm-hmm. That was supposed to be Owen Hart's gimmick. So it does make you sick, and you kind of wonder, like, man, like, Owen Hart would have ran with that. And who knows, you know, maybe Owen Hart would have been producing NXT television now and not Triple H would be a commentator on AEW or some shit. Who knows? But, yeah, it's just sad. Like, it's always bittersweet with Bret. You feel for him, especially with the screw job. And the way that things down in WCW and how it kind of tarnished his legacy a little bit. You know, they didn't really put him over like WWE did, and it just, things just never got off the right foot after the screw job. So
right. And I think one last thing I took away from it was Vince McMahon said it, and somebody else said it in there, that when Bret Hart carried the world title in WWE, the model way you would want somebody to carry the title, to represent it. I mean, he was 100% full in with the title. And that's the kind of guy you want. And I'm sounding like a Bret Hart mark right now, cause I am, but that's the kind of way. And a couple of people said it on there. That's the type of person in the way that you want somebody to carry your world title in a promotion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And the thing, the knock always on him is, oh, the ratings and all the new generation sucked. How is that his fault? Like, you know, I'm trying to think of all the jobber dudes, like the dumpster dude, dumpster whatever the hell his name is. The goon and Red Rooster. Like, all these jabronis that it's not his fault that they didn't have anybody on his level, but when he was in the ring with Owen or Shawn or Taker, or he had those huge blood feuds, Stone Cold, we all were like, come on, like, dude, all of those feuds were crazy. The Iron Man match at Mania, the I Quit match at Mania with Stone Cold. I mean, you could go on and on with Bret's matches. So people talk about the, oh, you know, his career as champ was just – littered with the ratings and that new generation. Like, it's not his fault the amount of talent he had to work with. So,
Now, John, let's hear you, John. Like, because you hate Bret Hart.
I don't hate Bret Hart. I know nobody. I'm probably in the middle somewhere. Okay. So here's the deal. I know nobody's saying bad ratings because Kevin Nash had horrible ratings when he was the champ. Horrible, right? As Diesel. When I watched the documentary, and like I said, I got to finish it. I've only watched 80% of it. I was reminded of how great he started out in the tag team way with Nyd Hart and with Jimmy Hart and the Hart Foundation, and then how he was slowly elevated to wrestling terms, mid-card status, those are things that didn't really mean nothing to me then. When he was World Tag Team Champion, I looked at him with respect. When he was Intercontinental Champion, I think I looked at him with even more respect than when they put the big belt on him. When they put the big belt on, I do remember when I was a youngster, I liked him more. I liked his IC runs because I thought he had better feuds and better opponents when he was IC champ than he was the world champ. I feel like when he was the world champ, you said it, Fred. They had him wrestling against Barbarian, who was like past his prime. They had him wrestling against Duke the Dumpster Drozzy, who wasn't a draw. You know what I'm saying? So unless he was wrestling Shawn, and then when Stone Cold did become Stone Cold, that was a little bit further on into his career. And then by that time, Bret Hart was a heel, and he wasn't necessarily the good guy that was out, coming out there. And it wasn't like Cena, it wasn't like Hogan. The fan connection that he had, I think his fan connection was more organic. We saw him come up from the tag team division to like the IC division when they put the big belt on him or whatever. But I never liked Bret Hart as a heel. That's me. I never liked him as a heel. I never liked the American Canadian. You know what I'm saying? I never liked it. I mean, even when they put him in stronger heels together, like when they put him in Brian Pillman and Bulldog, I didn't necessarily like it. I always liked Bret Hart as the good guy. That's what I think that he is. You know what I'm saying? When you look at who Vince let run the back, so it sounded like always that Undertaker was in the middle. He respected Bret as the champ. And even said in some of his interviews, "Well, why don't you have Bret drop the title to me instead of Shawn, and then I'll do the deed and lose it to Shawn because Shawn and Taker had a better relationship." You know what I'm saying? Bret Hart didn't see Shawn Michaels the way everybody else. Shawn Michaels probably sees his rise to fame just like Bret Hart. He did the same thing. He was in the tags. He did Intercontinental Championships, especially all the Intercontinental titles he did with the ladder and whatnot. But to the boys in the back, Shawn was tearing up locker rooms and couches and hotels and being a jerk about certain things. And, like, you know, I, again, I'm not saying, you know, that Shawn has said he's sorry and made apologies and his smile has come back and all that crap, right? But again, man, I think Vince didn't do his stuff. I'm not blaming Vince solely. But Vince didn't do himself any favors by the Montreal Screwjob. And then, like I said, allowing Bret to allow things to get that bad, okay? Ultimately, Vince McMahon runs the WWF, runs whatever, WWE, whatever you want to call it. Title, he should have done it. I mean, he's smart. I mean, I'm telling you, I think Vince McMahon is a genius, but he should have found a smarter way than, and he has done it. He's done it before, you know what I'm saying? Transitional champions. So it's because if Hogan didn't want to drop it to whoever, he found a smart way or keen way to drop it to Yokozuna or some kooky, whatever. You know, Bret Hart deserved better than the Montreal Screwjob. You know what I'm saying? Especially after his brother died. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that, again, nobody, I mean, to me and you and to some folks, it was like, oh, man, it's tragic. But, like, dude, and he kept on wrestling. I would have stopped. I'm like, man, my brother died in a wrestling accident. It was an accident, but damn. You know what I'm saying? I know money was paid and all that, but, like, still, man, it would leave a bad taste in anybody's mouth, bad thoughts in anybody's mind, you know. I like watching the documentary. I was really, really reminded of the magic that he had early on in his career when he rose to fame. All those tag team matches against Demolition and even the Legion of Doom when it came over and all those IC matches he had against whatever opponent. You know what I'm saying? Great opponent. Hell, even he had a great matches against Ric Flair. When he won the world title against Ric Flair. I think about all those times. You know what I'm saying? Bret Hart as a fan favorite, not necessarily, but definitely not his WCW career.
Okay. Into that.
Did either of you guys actually watch that Over the Edge pay-per-view live? What happened?
Yes, I did.
The Owen Hart accident. Yeah, my grandma, shout out to my grandma in Michigan, 80 years old, kicking the Grim Reaper and the Ding Dong.
That's good.
She used to order all the WWF shows for us, and I remember seeing the Blue Blazer versus the Godfather. I'm like, man, I'm going to go get some pizza. The pizza was in the kitchen. And I went in, and I came back in, and my cousin was just, like, his jaw was to the ground. And then, you know, you hear JR give that, you know, I have the unfortunate responsibility to let everybody know. And, man, we were just shocked. And then the fact that the show went on, it's like, and
yeah.
If you go back and watch that pay-per-view, and don't go to Peacock, because Peacock sucks, like, just watch it on YouTube. Man, what a poop-the-bed app that Peacock is for WWE. Like, it is horrible. But, yeah, if you
it's hard to search
app,
for stuff on there, too.
Yeah, it's so horrible. But don't want to get sidetracked with the horrible Peacock app. But if you YouTube that Over the Edge show and you watch the Stone Cold Undertaker's match, if you watch Undertaker's match, that is the closest to seeing Undertaker break character in a ring than you ever will see. Like, he just looks like he doesn't want to be there. Like, it's written all over his face. It's so bizarre going back and watching the matches that took place after the accident. So.
Right.
Okay.
Well, Fred, it's always a pleasure to have you on, man. What you ordering tonight from Jet's Pizza?
Oh, it's the $5 small deep dish one topping pizza. It's $5 for the quality of Jet's Pizza. The quality of Jet's Pizza, and for $5, can't beat it.
Wow.
The only lousy thing is that Dynamite's on Friday, so it's not a Dynamite night. So
yeah, why is it on Fridays?
The playoffs, NBA playoffs on TNT.
Okay. I guess that makes sense. So I was wondering the other Friday night, I kept seeing on Twitter, like, why was it on a Friday? Because I know they're moving to TBS, and they're going to have to move because the NHL is going to be on there, but that makes sense now.
Yeah, man. NBA Finals predictions before I go?
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, I'll drop it. Nets on.
Nets Clippers.
Man.
If they can get it right, the ship right the ship.
Man, I'm going to go on.
I like the
Suns.
That's a good pick.
I'm going to say Suns Hawks.
Oh, man. You better hope Embiid gets Rona, or, like, has one of those LeBron James ankle injuries that last for, like, 9 years or whatever. You know? Maybe he'll get the LeBron ankle sprain.
Oh, well.
All right. Fred, it's been a pleasure, my guy.
Always. Take care, guys. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for calling in.
Fred Fellner, KFAB Connection. Always great to talk to him. I know you're not a Bret Hart hater, John. I just wish you had the love for him that I do.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to get him. I need to get him on the show. If I can get him on the show, I'll do a full 2 hours.
I guess so. We do.
Full 2 hours.
Up to three. Hey, man, shout out to Fred Felder for the K. Hey, hold on. Shout out to Fred Felder. Hey, man, he dropped that NHL bomb on us. I wasn't ready for it.
Oh, yeah.
I try to get Brad on, man. I'll see what I can do. I have to ask a friend of a friend of a friend.
Please. We need to get 2 hours out of him. I'm sorry. Maybe three. By the way, while that was going on, J. Michael, Pacers B reporter for the Indy Star, had a couple tweets go out. Somebody goes, like, according to the J. Michael, the Knicks, Lakers, Clippers, Hornets, and Pelicans are among the teams that are inquired about Pacers center Miles Turner. Then J. Michaels responded back, the Hornets and T-Wolves, and this is in all caps, really want Turner, like really do. Hornets and T-Wolves. So
Hornets,
we'll see what
I said. Yeah, they've been wanting. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm shocked about the T-Wolves. That's kind of a shocker. But I don't know, Brandon. Looking at my Magic 8-ball, man, the T-Wolves should be picking in the top five picks. Do you want to move Miles Turner for a top five?
Let's do it.
I'm saying, if a deal was to happen, now my mind is running. If a deal was to happen, they want to move. They want to take Miles. They give, and then depending upon where they pick, either 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5. Because again, like I said before, if you want to be in this draft, impact player, you can find some quality guys down the line. You know what I'm saying? But you're gonna have to do your homework on them. The top five guys in this draft, you're gonna want to have in your organization. You know what I'm saying? That's
right.
A Jalen Suggs. That's a Jalen Green. That's a Cade Cunningham. You know what I'm saying? Those are just three of the five, right? But if I'm the Pacers, I listen to what Minnesota's offering. But if it doesn't, if they can't give us anybody out of the lottery, then I'm hanging up the phone.
Okay. Jay Michaels also said, if the Pacers stick with an experienced roster, meaning no rebuild, the next coach will be experienced with a modern offensive mindset. A rebuild option is on the table, quote, Herb Simon would have to say so.
Okay.
Those are our latest tweets from Jay Michael. We might have to get him on the show, John. You might have to do your
I bet you just well, we might call you might have to, you might have to call JMV. JMV call a favor in for us.
Exactly. Might have to. John, I asked a question the other night. I actually watched on Sunday night. There was nothing on TV, obviously. Sunday night I couldn't sleep, so I laid down and I watched the Logan Paul Floyd Mayweather fight. Watched it illegally. I didn't pay the $50. I watched it illegally online.
That's
but
cool. Tell the truth.
Floyd and Logan, Floyd got the bag. He got the money. He toyed with Logan, let him hang in there all 8 rounds. Somebody that's mostly all Hall of Famer boxer of all time, undefeated, and he let some YouTuber. Now, granted, Logan Paul's a fighter, a boxer. He did better than I thought he would. But he was gassed. Mm-hmm. I think Floyd held him up a few times. That does not give a good image to a sport that is already struggling.
Right. Some of the negative people, did they want Ivan Drago and Apollo Creed? Did they want Ivan Drago to knock out Apollo Creed to death? You know what I mean? Is that what they want? Did we want to see a car crash? did they actually think Logan Paul was going to knock out? Nobody's knocked out Floyd Mayweather ever. Right. So
right.
Did they think Logan Paul, as good as he's been in the UFC or MMA area, wherever, you know what I'm saying, sanctioned, did they think that was going to happen?
Mayweather never knocks anybody out. He always does a little stick and move and holds out for the entire thing.
Right. So again, what did we expect? We expected, you know, I'm not weak because I didn't watch it. And I barely wanted to watch the highlights, and I definitely didn't like what Floyd Mayweather said afterwards, because, you know what I'm saying, he said something to the tune that I'm the greatest stick-up guy ever, you know what I'm saying? He starts gloating about the ad reads on his trunks, and again, he said, he starts taking the shit on the media, and he starts, you know what I mean, almost taking the shit on the fans, if you're a smart fan, like, why would you pay for that? If this guy does have no, you don't want to know Danny Bridges, you know, friend of the program, Danny Bridges' thoughts on him. But, like, man, if this guy still has, you know, saying gas left in the tank, then fight somebody of note. You know what I'm saying? Train up for that. Not necessarily, I mean, again, you know what I'm saying, not necessarily exhibition, man. But I thought you have a kick out of the undercard with Ocho Cinco, man. Okay.
Did you like that?
As far as being in shape, he looked good. He looked pretty good, much in shape, man. But, He almost got knocked out, man. So, I doubt, unless the money is right, I doubt Ocho Cinco fights in another.
How much would it take to get Jonathan Birdsong in a boxing ring for charity or for an exhibition?
They ain't got enough money. They ain't got enough money.
Is it because you don't want to, or you don't want to do the training? Because there's a difference.
I train. I train against, but you know what I mean. But I ain't getting knocked out. No, we they don't want no tape of that. I'd have to confiscate the tape afterwards. So no money.
John Rahm caught was a 6-shot leader after the third round this past weekend in the PGA, over at the Memorial in Ohio. After he finishes round, the cameras caught the official coming right up to him, not doing it in private, saying, hey, you caught COVID. You tested positive. You're removed from golf. You can't compete. So he gets eliminated. Goes down to Colin Morikawa and Patrick Cantlay. They go to a playoff. Cantlay wins it. People are complaining about, well, why couldn't John Rahm play it early in the morning? Or why couldn't he play it on a Monday by himself? Because it's different conditions. Courses are in different conditions. Everybody needs to be able to play with what the condition is that they're set at. So having him play a different one is not feasible. The guy had a chance to get the COVID vaccine. He did not get the COVID vaccine. So he caught COVID. That's on him. He knew what was available and whatnot. If you took the vaccine, you do not get tested. That's in the PGA rules. They're not testing you if you've got the COVID vaccine. So guess what? He didn't get the vaccine, so he knew he was up for contract chasing. By the way, he also got the vaccine, like, after he found out that he was near somebody who tested positive for contract tracing. So he knew he was already in contract tracing already. So he knew that part, but he got the COVID the very next day after he found out that he was near somebody that had COVID. That's almost like taking a girl to take a plan B after having sex and say, well, we're going to go take plan B and she's going to get taken care of. That's the equivalent of that. Like, do you think that's going to work just like that? So everybody's saying, oh, poor John Rahm. No. John Rahm, you're a dumbass. You get what you deserve because you had your chance to get the vaccine. You didn't do it. So guess what? You suffer the consequences.
Yeah, the golf guy should have been a little bit more, you know what I'm saying? Hey, man.
There's a certain way to do it. They didn't do it the right way. I agree with that.
Right. Oh, man. John Rahm ain't gonna love on this program. So let's move on to the next topic,
Brandon. John, I got the people want to know without giving spoilers away. Rating scale for Loki?
Oh, 8 out of 10. If it's a 10-point scale, 8 out of 10. First episode, if you didn't care for the end of the WandaVision or you didn't necessarily like how the middle part of Falcon and Winter Soldier kind of, you know what I'm saying, left you flat. This is where you want to be at. This is back to, you know what I'm saying, in-game level intrigue, you know what I mean? So, yeah, 8 out of 10.
Do we have another new Captain America that's white that I see on
Twitter?
No,
that's from The Boys. That's a different universe. The Boys
okay.
is a different, totally different.
I can't keep stuff together.
But they, you know, all these comic book companies, they cheat off one another. They look at each other's homework, and yeah. So yeah, that's a new captain. He's actually even called the captain, on The Boys. So yeah, he's a new guy for them, for sure. Okay. Yeah, but not related to the Marvel universe, Captain America.
Gotcha. All right, John, what else you got, my man? Everything on my list we've run through. So if you've got anything, we can talk it. I need to start doing that. I need to start giving you time to talk topics that I don't have on my list.
No, I think, but usually our topics kind of mirror, to be honest with you. I finally did watch Dawn of the Day of the Dead, the Army of
Ooh.
The Dead. It felt like, Brandon, it felt like Zack Snyder wrote a sequel to Dawn of the Dead. And because whatever Hollywood guy or gal said no, Netflix said yes. And it really felt like a sequel to Dawn of the Dead, if you remember that old movie with they came back in the early 2000s. Zombie babies? Zombies being pregnant? You know what I'm saying?
How about her dying? The queen? Spoiler.
Oh, man, I thought it was a good movie. I can't necessarily give it 8 out of 10 or anything like that. Man, there was a lot of things that didn't necessarily make sense. You know what I mean? Especially dropping a nuke on Las Vegas and somebody surviving in a vault. You know what I mean? Like, you know, dropping a nuke anywhere, I don't know if anything's going to survive, much less zombies or anything else.
I was hoping he was going to stay alive. I liked him.
Well, there's rumor that there's going to be some sequels. Because there's some things they want to explain. Is that kind of wants to – go rewatch it, Brandon, the first 2 minutes. I'm not telling you rewatch the whole movie. I watched it more than twice. I actually watched that more than twice. That's why I ain't watched the Bret Hart documentary twice yet. They're saying that those might be alien zombies because they remember they came out of Area 51. Remember those soldiers are talking about they
right.
were driving from Area 51.
Is that great?
When you when you watch the first 2 minutes of it, you'll see two things flying in the air right before everything starts going crazy. You'll see like some flying saucers. It's real fast though.
Okay.
So there's gonna be like Netflix has greenlit like two more, like Zack Snyder to write two more. He probably already got them written. To make two more movies in that particular universe. Unfortunately, Dave Bautista ain't gonna make neither one of them.
Damn. Okay. What else you got?
I know we got like 20 more minutes or so, man. I really don't have anything, man. I know we have, Brandon. We kind of touched on everything from Major League Baseball to NFL to NHL. We took a whole hour on 45 minutes on the Pacers, man. Shame on D-Cod. Shout out to D-Cod if you listen to the show. I know he's vacationing. He doesn't. I don't want to tell you where he's at. I know he's vacationing this week or whatever. You talked to King of Trolls this week?
I did. He's upset. He missed last week's show, and he's going to be even more upset he missed this week's show. So that's why he's the number two or three caller.
We can take down the four. How about that? We can take down the four.
Ooh, that was you, not me.
That's cool, man. So we lose number three. We can say that. Have you deep dive into that that Bill Cowher Pittsburgh Steelers book any?
I've read the first two chapters in it, and that's about it. So I'm gonna dive into it here soon.
What's it kind of? This kind of covers his time and tenure with the Steelers.
Everything. It covers everything with him going into from high school to playing college at NC State, to him getting his first coaching gig as an assistant, to him becoming the Steelers coach, to losing his first wife to cancer, and then finding his coming over that resiliency, coming back, and having his daughters all marry and grandkids, to his new wife, and kind of his career after football, because how he was kind of a little lost after that, after he retired and then he went to CBS. So I'm looking forward to it. That's going to be the big summer read is sport books. So I've got a couple. I got to finish that Great Event Wrestling one still.
What's the name of that? What's the name of that one for the listeners? Because I know they're like, what the hell?
Heart and Steel.
Okay. I always seen Bill Cowher as a fiery guy. You think he's retired? You think he'll never coach ever?
Yeah.
He
loves Pittsburgh too much to come back and coach another gig.
Organization. Got you.
Plus, plus, as we always say, John, it's a little bit easier when you're in that booth, right, than having to do the extra snow.
I'll go back to the Pacers for a little bit, man. People are talking about Jeff Van Gundy, Mark Jackson. Listen, audience. Hey, them dudes, unless somebody gives them a crazy – shame on John Gruden. John Gruden got $100 million. What else was he supposed to do? Stay at ESPN so he get fired? Hell, they just fired Kenny Mayne after 27 years, and he's way better than anybody. You know what I'm saying, as far as announcing goes. But, like, nah, man, somebody offers, you know what I'm saying, Jeff Van Gundy or Mark Jackson to come out at ESPN booth to come coach a franchise, I think they go. But until then, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think, like I said, Mark Jackson and Jeff staying back. I sound like Dan Dockers talking crazy. Unless Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson are staples in the booth, man. So I don't think they're you can take them off anybody's coaching list.
Right.
Speculation, you know what I mean, for sure. So
I got a little preview for you.
What you got?
So I've got my college football magazine. So I've been listening a lot of college football preview podcasts so far that they've been doing. Yes, they've been doing it. And read my magazine. I've got some two hot takes.
Give them to me.
A little esque as the one I call where Alabama wasn't going to get into the college football playoff, one something like that. But it's not this one. So this one, a couple of them. I love the Lane train this year. Oh, I think Ole Miss is going to be great again. They still got their quarterback coming back, Matt Corral. He came back. He's only a junior. He's coming back. The SEC, I think, is going to be down this year, John. Overall, I think it's going to be a down year. The Florida Gators are going to be – I know they're trying to finish number two, but they've lost a lot of guys, a lot of guys. So I don't know if the Florida Gators do it. But I've got my true number one team, and it's not Alabama.
Uh-oh, we're going to lose the listener. But go ahead. What's number one?
It'll be the Georgia Bulldogs this year. This is the year, John. They've got a quarterback. They've got a defense. They've got a running back. This is the year. They are picked to win the East, and they're nationally ranked number 5. This is the year. Everything I've been hearing, everything I've read in this book about Georgia shows that this is the year for them to be in that college football playoff. And somebody said it the other day on a podcast, and I thought it was perfectly. There's 3 teams that are always locked in to the college football playoff, and it's up to them who they want to invite as the 4th every year.
Okay.
So, and you can name those 4 teams: Clemson, Alabama, Ohio
Georgia.
State.
Yeah. Yep.
And then who they want? Do you want Georgia? Do you want Notre Dame? Do you want Texas A&M? You name that 4 team you want in there. But I think it's Georgia's big year. I think this is the year that they make it to the national championship game and even could win it. I'm going to go ahead and put that out there here in June 9th. Another team I like, John, is Nevada. Not to do too much, but I think they're going to win the Mountain West. Shout out Brady Hoke that's out there as well in San Diego State for his 3rd year again. But I like Nevada. Everybody on their offense, all 11 starters have returned for this team, who was already good last year.
Okay.
I think Nevada is going to be a good mid-major. It's going to be up there, kind of you would see UCF of last few years. But I do like them. Some people are saying LSU could be I've heard people say LSU is going to come back, bounce back better this year. But I've also seen some that said they're going to be – that this is another bad year for our boy down there in Baton Rouge. So we'll see there. Great first game, Miami, Florida versus Alabama. I hope the Canes are ready because Alabama and Bryce Young are going to be coming for them.
Man, Miami. I know the alumni will be out in full force, man, whether it's Chad or – or I'm trying to think, or guy Adrian, or even I'm trying to think who else is an alumni. My goodness, I can't think right now. But yeah, I know the alumni be out in full force thinking they got a shot. But I think Alabama. I don't even know the scouting report. I think Alabama rolls Miami. Miami's been a fraud. Hopefully, the Miami Hurricanes has been a fraud the last couple of seasons, man. As far as like the national picture is concerned, ACC they still can remain competitive as far as that league is concerned, somewhat. But they've been a fraud, man. So hopefully next week we get some callers calling in because, like I said, Jonathan Birdsong signed it. The Miami Hurricanes are a fraud.
Ooh, shit. Let me ask you this, Arch Manning. Two questions, two things with him. Number one, does he go to Clemson? They've offered him. And number two, I knew it wouldn't be long before First Take's segment would be, does Arch Manning end up better than Peyton, better than Eli, and better than Papa Manning? That was one of their segments.
Sometimes, like Fred said, man, sometimes these guys forget that their sports is kind of going around and they know that, you know what I'm saying, things kind of have to – they come with these polarizing, you know, or what they think is polarizing takes and, you know what I'm saying, guys just now getting his feet wet into the game, man, you know what I mean? We do know there's some you know what I'm saying, there's history with that particular family. I'm sure that he's been – thinking about the kids, been thinking about being a quarterback, you know what I'm saying, since he was time he better pick up a football, right? There's no way he could, he wasn't going to be an actor, you know what I mean, in that particular family. But could kind of say that, you know what I'm saying, leapfrog, all of, I mean, we're talking about Super Bowls, we're talking about 4 Super Bowls, we're talking about all-time greats and Peyton and even the Hall of Famer. Both of the brothers in the Hall of Fame, man. So, again, man, I sometimes they just come up with segments just to get people to listen. And I don't know. That's kind of kooky. Instead of just saying, hey, the kid's going to this particular college, or he's going to say he's going to this particular college, and there you go.
Right.
But, man. And, again, Brandon, I almost want to kind of go in on some of the clowns crap that – and I know you said First Take, and that's the other side. But I want to get on to the clown stuff that comes out of Skip Bayless's mouth, man, on the day-to-day basis, man. But I think if they say Clemson, he'd be crazy not to go there. He'd be crazy not to go there. From how they groom quarterbacks there, whether it's Deshaun Watson – or even our guy we got down in Jacksonville right now.
Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence, they do put out quality. They, you know what I'm saying? He does know what he's doing when it comes to grooming quarterbacks.
Right. Everything I've seen about Sarkisian down in Texas, that John, it's going to take a year or so for them to kind of get up there. Right now they've got him picked to finish third in the Big 12, national rank of 20th. But I think it's just 1 year and they'll be fine. They got kind of a cupcake schedule, Louisiana at home, then they go to Arkansas, home against Rice, home against Texas Tech, and then at TCU, the Red River Shootout, and then the battle against Stillwater, at Baylor, at Iowa State, home against Kansas, at West Virginia, and home against Kansas State. So I think it'll be one more year before Sarkisian and them, Texas gets to where they want to be, where they feel like they should be. So take some time. Shout out Ball State Cardinals. They've got them picked second right now in the West Division. We know they were picked dead last year when they won the thing.
Right.
Ball State's got the, if you rank the units, the unit rankings, they've got, and the conference, Ball State's got number 3 quarterback, number 8 running back corp, number 2 wide receiver, number 2 offensive line, number 4 defensive line, number 1 linebacker corp, and number 2 defensive back. They are picking them to finish 7-5, 5-3 overall, going to another bowl game. September 11th is their first game. They go to Penn State. Happy Valley.
Well, I forgot about that. Hopefully, man, you know, things get moving, and you know, COVID numbers, and that, like I said, I looked at them today. They are dropping as far as our state is concerned. And hopefully, you know what I'm saying, we're back on the road. Looking to cover some of those Ball State games, you know what I mean? So I'm excited. I know they got a lot. I know some of the guys took advantage of the extended year. Seniors took advantage of the senior year, and they returned. You know, I don't know if that's fair or not. It is the NCAA rule, so they got to be right. I'm geeked. I mean, and then even though they're playing Penn State, they got a transfer. The kid from Michigan State transferred over. So again, man, I don't know. They got him picked for second. There's no way I would bet against the Cardinals going.
I agree. Hey, John, it feels good. It feels good talking college football already. Not gonna lie, I like it.
It's only June.
It's June. I'm already doing my prep work with my magazine. By the way, Sam Howell, Carolina quarterback, is right now the Heisman candidate. So Sam Howell, Carolina. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
That name a lot, man. Hopefully Carson Wentz doesn't wet the bed, and we're drafting Howell.
Damn, hopefully. 3 quarterbacks, 3 QBs drafted. You got Sam Ellinger, hopefully. So,
hopefully.
All right, John, that's all I've got, my man. Why don't you wrap us up for the evening?
Man, I want to again thank KFAB Connection for calling in and enlightening us about NHL, and of course, you know what I'm saying, his commentary on Bret Hart. How could we do it? How could we, you know what I'm saying, not have that round robin wrestling from him, opinion without him. Outside of that, I also want to thank both our sponsors, Scott K. Nichols, State Farm Insurance, and Maverick Custom Motorsports. Boy, it's a tongue twister. If you say it too fast, man, I want to thank them as well. Please, Crossroads listeners, support us. Support those who support us, man. Like I said, Scott K. Nichols, State Farm Insurance, and Maverick Custom Motorsports are both great sponsors and proud sponsors of Crossroads Sports. So, you know, saying click the links that we have and check out their services. Outside of that, man, I can't wait for next week. I hope the Pacers do not do anything crazy, or the Colts for that matter. But you never know, man. Sports world, it is what it is, man. So like I said, man, thanks everybody for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show. You can find more episodes on iTunes and the Google Play Store. Be sure to like and subscribe for more Crossroads Sports content.